Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be helping you reframe a stumbling block into a stepping stone. I'll also be interviewing author and scholar Missy Hood, who shares her story of battling severe attention deficit disorder and how she's learned to use it as a stepping stone. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My latest album, Restoration, was just released. Restoration is a continuation of the first album, Consolation. I like to think of these albums like books. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And like in any story, the character goes from a sense of grief and loss, and at the end of Consolation, finds hope for his future. In Restoration, he has an awakening. And in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which are not healthy, and it helps him come to a place of restoration, becoming greater than he was before. You may purchase this album on iTunes or any other digital music store. The name of the album is Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you're currently hearing is entitled Restoration. A 10-year-old boy decided to study judo despite the fact that he had lost his left arm in a devastating car accident. The boy began lessons with an old Japanese judo master. The boy was doing well, so we couldn't understand why, after 3 months of training, the master had taught him only one move. Sensei, the boy finally said, shouldn't I be learning more moves? The sensei replied, this is the only move you know, but this is the only move you'll ever need to know. Not quite understanding, but believing in his teacher, the boy kept training. Several months later, the sensei took the boy to his first tournament. Surprising himself, the boy easily won his first two matches. The third match proved to be more difficult, but after some time, his opponent became impatient and charged. The boy deftly used his one move to win the match. Still amazed by his success, the boy was now in the finals. This time, his opponent was bigger, stronger, and more experienced. For a while, the boy appeared to be overmatched. Concerned that the boy might get hurt, the referee called a timeout. He was about to stop the match when the sensei intervened. No, the sensei insisted, let him continue. Soon after the match resumed, his opponent made a critical mistake. He dropped his guard. Instantly, the boy used his move to pin him. The boy had won the match in the tournament. He was the champion. On the way home, the boy and the sensei reviewed every move in each and every match. Then the boy summoned the courage to ask what was really on his mind. Sensei, how did I win the tournament with only one move? You won for two reasons, the sensei answered. First, you've almost mastered one of the most difficult throws in all of judo. And second, the only known defense for that move is for the opponent to grab your left arm. The boy's biggest weakness had become his biggest strength. A stumbling block or a stepping stone. All things that happen in our life are going to cause us to have an opinion about it. Many of us don't realize that whatever our belief is or our perception is about a situation determines what we're going to feel. Our feelings then tell our body what to do. The problem is when any situation happens, our immediate perception of it will determine if it is a stumbling block or a stepping stone. Many times we experience something that perhaps we don't have a baseline for, have never experienced it before, and we become very frustrated and very overwhelmed because we don't have a way out. We can't figure a way how to overcome it. But remember, there's a difference between not knowing how to do something and not being able to do something. Many of us assume it's one and the same thing, but it's not. You may be going through something that you've never experienced it before, but that does not mean that you cannot overcome it. With research, with asking for people's assistance, with tenacity, you will overcome it. So I really want you to look at the difference between not being able to do something and not having any knowledge about the situation. One thing I always like for people to look at is any past experience you've had that will determine what to do. Now, it may be a completely different situation, but you overcame a situation. And that's the part I really want us to focus on. You've overcome something before. So with this new venture, you could overcome this as well. The point is, when we've done something before, we can then reframe it just like we did the first one. And that gives us the confidence that we will overcome this new frustration or this new situation. One thing I would really ask you is, how do you label yourself? When we experience a new stumbling block, often we take that situation and we label ourselves as that. For example, if you do poorly in school, then you consider yourself a failure. But let's say you went through a bankruptcy, you went through a divorce, or you went through a sickness. When we use that label to define who we are, then that stumbling block then becomes our identity. And when that stumbling block becomes our identity, we will no longer grow to the next level of our life, and we will not be able to develop into the person we were supposed to be. So I would ask you today, how do you label yourself? Are you successful? Are you intelligent? Are you a business person? Are you a student? However you define yourself today in this potential stumbling block will determine how quickly you overcome it. Be aware of what you're thinking and feeling. If you are feeling defeated, then it is a stumbling block. Nothing can stop you from being the person you are destined to be unless you allow it. Use any situation you're in as a stepping stone. And now, a quick word from my sponsor. Audible.com is offering you, my listener, a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader, so this is a no-brainer for me to go ahead and download any audiobook I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog, at the gym, or just even driving. So for you, to get your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. They have over 180,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the one you're looking for. So check it out today. Author and researcher Missy Hood has struggled with severe ADHD for over 30 years. She's lost over 40 jobs in 15 years, but has successfully learned to overcome this disorder and teaches many, like herself, how to cope and learn how to see this condition as a gift. Welcome to my show, Missy.
Hi, how are you doing, James?
Such a pleasure to have you on my show today.
I was excited. Yeah. So thanks so much. I'm looking forward to this.
Definitely. Now, you have quite a story here, which I think many people don't realize. Because I think a lot of times when we talk about attention deficit disorders, a lot of times people just think about that in children. And they don't realize that adults also have that as well. So it sounds like you had a severe case of that. Would you like to share with my listeners your whole background?
Oh, sure. Because when I was a child, ADHD hadn't been discovered by the science world yet. Mm-hmm. And so basically teachers kind of combined special ed kids within the normal school population. And so I didn't ever think anything was wrong with me. And that I learned slower, but it wasn't that I was not intelligent. Actually, I was an out-of-the-box thinker. Uh-huh. And basically, I had to have obviously a lot of more attention from teachers and things like that. It progressed into junior high school. But when it really became prevalent that it was a problem was when I started losing jobs. And my mom sat me down one day and she's like, "Do you need psychological counseling?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, now I do."
Yeah, after losing all those jobs, of course.
I was at a loss to tell her what was going on because even I didn't know.
Sure.
And so that was what kind of prompted me to go seek medical attention and try to find answers to my problem.
So let's talk about your jobs. You had over 40 jobs that you lost in 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
That had to have had a huge blow to your self-esteem.
Oh, gosh. And that's funny that you say that, because it was a real struggle, actually, because I remember when I was peaking about the 40th job loss, and I was losing jobs because of the way that I learn. And, mm-hmm. and if I have all four learning styles, I can learn as fast, if not faster, than the normal student,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in these positions, and I didn't have employers who were educated enough about or educated at all about ADD, ADHD, nor did they care to be because at that point, you know, I think people just want to hire somebody and get the job done. And so I was peeking at the job, my 40th job loss, and I sat out in a parking lot and I was just beside myself really. And I started praying and I was like, "God, either you're going to help me or I don't know. I don't know what's going to become of me." And I was really, really scared of, it's a big deal for me to go into a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big deal because I have to self-disclose, which can hinder me from getting the job or, you know, things like that. And
of
so
course.
It's just a real stress all the way around. But I guess now it's becoming more prevalent and people are becoming more aware of ADD, ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're as afraid of it or hiring somebody like me because we can be an asset.
Of course.
In my past job, I was there for 8 years and I won employee of the quarter 5 times in 3 years, and I saved my employer over $10,000 in that 8 years because of my gifting and my ability to see where people were ripping us off basically. And on top of that, I got 9 pay raises in that 8 years. And so it definitely is a gift if you allow me to use it the way that it is. Yeah. I mean, and be me.
Yeah, exactly. So you had this on your 40th job. What happened with that position?
I lost the job because I hadn't grasped the actual job skills, but a lot of it is too. I'm not going to say most employers, that's not really fair. Some employers want things yesterday. They have a McDonald's drive-thru mentality. And so they forget that it takes the average person at least 6 months to learn a job adequately. Well, for me, I can do that. And actually, I've excelled enough in the condition to where I can step it up and I know what tools to apply in order to excel and learn. But I just couldn't grasp the learning. And on top of that, people weren't teaching functions of a job in the learning styles that I learned in, which are all four, which are hands-on, visual, audio, and repetition. I have to have all four of those things whenever I sit down to learn, where the average person just needs audio.
Yeah. Sometimes you're even thrown just into the job and they're like, well, kind of figure it out. And that in itself, when you already don't know what you're doing, and then you may not be able to incorporate these learning styles. And that's just really a setup for anybody, but even a setup for you.
Yeah. That actually happened in my last job. And what was interesting about that was that because so many people are going to virtual technology, well, virtual technology all provides all four of those learning styles.
Yeah.
And so it's systematic. You're on the computer. You've got visual. You've got audio, repetition, things like that. And so it's interesting to me the way we're moving forward as a society, how that's kind of advancing to the it's to my advantage, actually.
Yeah, it certainly is. Did you go to university?
I did, actually. I am in my doctorate program right now. And that's phenomenal as far as – and I don't mean to, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back.
Oh, please do, though. I think that's wonderful.
Like, no, I mean it from the stance, though, because I had many professors tell me we were just not college material. Mm-hmm. And they would tell my parents, you know, she just needs to learn a trade and probably just, you know, get a little receptionist job, blah, blah. And it just dashed my dreams. Wow. It made me mad because I was like, I'm not going to let you dictate my future like that.
Good for you.
And so I was forced to go back, actually, after my dad passed away. I was 22, and I attempted college 3 times. And on the third attempt, I just made up my mind that I was going to do whatever it took. And it was in that time that I started watching, and it was crazy how it happened, because I started observing the ways that I learned, the patterns and the ways that I learned. And the very fact that I would even be able to be attentive to that actually surprises me.
That's great. Yeah, well, that insight itself, because you were able to really focus on something, the whole focus concentration component is so important. But for you to grasp that and to really hold that in the forefront of your mind and to be able to look at the themes that you would demonstrate perhaps in your past or your study style, all that as well, I think really shows to your tenacity.
It's interesting in how all that came about, but it wasn't until my master's program I developed all these coping skills that I just did for me to get by. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, everybody does this. And pardon me, I wrote my master's thesis on coping skills, students with special needs and coping skills. And I went into my master's thesis, orals and writtens, and all these professors were in there where it wasn't, I mean, I'm talking like 10, and there was only supposed to be 3. And I got overwhelmed, and I was asking one of my professors, I was like, what are all these people doing here? He goes, they requested to sit on your panel.
Wow.
I was like, why? But it was because my research had spawned other new research, like in dealing with soldiers with PTSD, and also teaching the university how to deal with students like myself. It ended up revamping their entire Office of Disability Services at Texas State and the way that they help teach students like myself. And so I walked out of there almost in tears.
Missy, is amazing. Wow.
I mean, but I never intended it. And they were like, how did you learn how to do this? And I was like, I was like stunned. I was like, you mean this is new? I said, it seems so trivial.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how I ended up in my PhD program. And so here I am, and I'm just more than grateful to be here.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting. I love to hear these types of stories when someone's telling you that you're not college material, that you should just learn a trade or be a receptionist somewhere. And here you are in your master's program defending your thesis. And here you are revamping the Office of Disabilities at your university. I love this story.
I was actually taken. I wasn't even expecting that, actually. And I ended up going to a conference. That spawned a conference, which spawned my book, And so, yeah, it's just spawned all of these things that I never would have ever dreamed of. Wow. So if he'd asked me 25 years ago, hey, you're going to be in your PhD program in about 25 years, I'd be like, okay. Thanks, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I really mean that. I really mean that, though.
At any point in your life, did you ever feel that you weren't that intelligent?
Yeah, I grew up that way. Actually, that was one of the biggest things that affected my self-esteem for years, that I wasn't good enough, that I was too stupid. Mm. And what was interesting is because when I was doing my oils and my writtens and I came out of it, one of my professors followed me and he was like, Lizzie, I want you to consider your PhD program. And I was like, what? And I said, I'm not smart enough to do that. And he said, are you kidding me?
Wow.
He said, young lady, are you aware of what you've accomplished thus far? And that ended up, I won an award for that thesis. And these things, he goes, I don't think you're aware, Melissa, of your capabilities in the way that you see life and the way that you look at information. And he goes, and you have a lot to offer people in what you can teach them. And so that was kind of an eye-opener for me, that maybe I wasn't so stupid. Yeah. And maybe the joke was on me for believing it.
Mm. Even today, how often do you struggle with those voices or those perhaps situations when you were younger that said you can't do something? How do those impact you today?
I think as human beings, I think we all struggle with, you know, things from the past or, you know, and what people have once said about us or what they perceived us to be. Mm-hmm. But for me, I mean, I'm a real believer. I'm a strong believer in the Lord, and I really utilize my faith a lot and the positiveness that comes out of that. I don't give a lot of credence to a lot of things in the past, although I'm not going to say that I don't think about it, that it did slip up on me from time to time. I think it happens to all of us, actually.
So you re-identified yourself as a successful, brilliant person you are today.
I'm not saying that I would see myself as a brilliant, successful person. I would say that it's definitely helped my self-esteem.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really turned a lot of that old thinking around.
Sure.
To where I believe a lot more positive things about myself now as opposed to the negative that I once believed.
Good. Well, I guess I see you as that brilliant person, so that's why I'm saying that.
I appreciate you.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
you know,
course.
That's important, too, because when I go to book signings and things, well, I went to one in San Antonio, actually, where a dad had his little boy sit down in front of me, and he looked at me, and it was like he was in desperation. And he was like, Miss Hibb, can you please talk to my son about this condition, and can you please talk to him about him? And the first thing out of my mouth, I was like, I want you to know, first of all, young man, you are the most brilliant out-of-the-box thinker. I said, and you have an Einstein IQ, and don't you ever let anybody tell you otherwise. You understand?
Oh, wow.
And he just smiled real big. And so, I mean, it's, you really have to start really pumping these kids up young.
Yeah, you really
letting
do.
Letting them know you're significant, you're awesome, and you're going to be somebody big someday. Hmm. So
that must feel so good for you to be on the other side of that with who you are today, being able to help these young children or help people that may be struggling with ADD.
Oh, yeah. I love it. That's my favorite thing, actually, is to be able to see somebody and to find out where they're at in their walk and in their journey with this condition and tell them, hey, this is what can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the possibilities. You're not limited. Matter of fact, you're so not limited because of your ability and your high IQ. And I'll start pinpointing things about them, like saying, I bet you have so many interests, you don't know which one to attack first. And they'll be like, yeah, that's me. And I'll start pinpointing other things. And then I've got their attention to actually carry them forward into more of a positive direction, a possibility that they walk away. I have so many people that walk away almost in tears because they're like, listen, I'm so grateful. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. And I'm so grateful I'm getting your book. I am too.
Well, I think you normalize I think you normalize it so much that they do realize that there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. They just think differently. And yeah. I think that's so validating.
Oh my gosh. You know, I never thought about that until you just said that.
Yeah.
But you're right. That is it, I guess, because for me, it has become ingrained as such a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big deal to me.
Yeah.
For any person, my whole life goal has always been, I don't care who you are, I don't care from what walk of life you come from, I want to celebrate you. And I don't care who that is. I always make it a point, I've done it since I was a little girl, And I just think that it really validates people and lets them know it doesn't matter what you struggle with. It doesn't matter what past you come from. You're loved and you're highly valuable. Yes. You're highly valuable.
That's amazing.
Very important.
So tell us a little bit more about your research. So after you defended your master's and then they changed up the disability, Office of Disability, how did that impact the university overall?
Oh my goodness. They started applying it to new orientation students that came in because I set up a program for them about what a student like myself would actually need upon entering a four-year college program. Mm-hmm. And basically teaching students how to create structure. That's the number one thing we need in order to thrive in any environment is structure. And how do you create structure? Well, it's going to comprise of having coping skills, teaching students what those coping skills are, teaching them how to utilize cell phone calendars for reminders, mm-hmm. and meeting important deadlines. And all these things like staying on a schedule, eating right, exercising. All of these things help create structure, that component that we need to thrive.
I think itself, because when people who have ADD, their mind is so expansive in so many different things that to create that structure then gives them the framework to be able to be even more successful and be able to think even more outside the box because they have that infrastructure that allows them to be successful and reminds them of the things that they need to do within the parameters of structure itself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that you say that because one of my professors in my orals and my writtens looked at me and it's like a light went on. And he said, you mean by creating structure, we're giving them something to hang their tools on.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yes.
And so they can carry that structure with them as they move into higher critical thinking skills within their career or within their, say, education or whatever avenue of life they want to pursue. It's a structural component that they carry with them, they grab those tools off of as they need them. And it just keeps growing as they grow.
Exactly. And it's tailored to their specific symptoms or it's tailored
yes.
to their specific personality itself.
Absolutely. I think more towards the symptoms of the condition that they mm-hmm. struggle with. But I agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's wonderful. So tell me more about your doctorate program.
My doctorate program is in educational development with a minor in transformational leadership.
Wow.
And actually, I am going to utilize it hopefully to train up the leaders of tomorrow and training them, you know, how to teach people like me. But it's not going to just focus on ADD, ADHD students. It's going to be on a wider audience of people. And so I feel like hopefully I'll have something to offer.
Of course you do.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, but that's pretty much what my focus is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I'm hoping to become a public speaker out of that and hopefully write some more books. I'm starting on my second book right now, which will hopefully be out in 2017.
Oh, great.
And
okay.
Hopefully, yeah. And so that's my goal, but they're shooting like for April. But long story short, yeah, I want to help people, and so that's what my life story is about, is helping people.
That's wonderful. Well, tell me about your first book.
My first book, Memoirs. I love memoirs. Memoirs is about my life story, and it starts the reader all the way back from when I was a child and all my little mishaps that I got into through curiosity and impulsivity, and then takes them into when I was in the film industry. And then how I broke out of that, and because I really was more of a left brain thinker, mm-hmm. very analytical, and I just didn't know it. And I'm right and left brain actually. And so I was in the creative field for a while and then broke in because I wanted something more challenging. And so I take them into that and I take them forward how I moved into where I'm at now.
That's amazing.
It's just very interesting. Yeah, it was fun, and it's kind of evolving as far as it's going to be probably the segue into my second book. So we'll see how that goes when we get there.
And the second book, are you able to talk a little bit about that?
The second book is just about helping people with everyday life and helping them to create tools that they need to make it into destiny. I think life is becoming so challenging right now with the different things and the complexities that we each deal with every day, all day, that we need to have complex solutions, and we need to have the tools to find and combat those, create those solutions with. And so that's what I'm going to be teaching about in that book, but it's called The King's Key Ring.
Now, is this more of a self-help book? Is this more of a how-to book? Is it a novel?
It's a self-help. It's going to be more self-help.
Okay.
And so basically The King's Key Ring is about teaching keys and based on biblical principles as well.
Oh, okay.
And how a person can advance forward and move into destiny. Because we have so many frustrated people in society right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of angry people. But you know why they're angry? They're angry because they can't seem to break into their heart's desire or their destiny, what they were put into the earth to do. And so that's what this book's going to be about. It's like, this is why you were put here. These are the tools you're going to use to climb your mountain, and there are going to be some obstacles in climbing. There are going to be some rocks that hit you on the way up, but you're going to continue going, and you're not going to stop until you get there.
That's amazing. I think that's going to be a wonderful book that many people are going to really benefit from that.
I sure hope so. We'll find out. I've got to start it probably... I've already started it, but I want to rewrite it. So I'm going to be starting that in August. But yeah, we'll see.
You know, one of the things I really like to teach people is the reframe of, is it a stumbling block or is it a stepping stone? And that's so important for people to be able to reframe that. Because if we look at something as an obstacle, well, then we can't get over it. But if you look at it as a stepping stone, then that becomes a foundation for us to launch into the deep of where we're supposed to go, or who we're supposed to be.
You know, that's really interesting. That's an interesting take on that, actually, too, because it is all in your mindset. It's about the mindset, and is the glass half empty or half full? You're right. You're absolutely right. And how we approach problems, and do they build up my character, or are they just gonna, am I gonna let it define me and demolish me? I mean, so I believe that every single thing in this life that happens to us, especially bad things, because we can't stop everything,
correct?
And we can try to be proactive and things like that, but I believe that when the bad things or the hard things do come, it's all in how we face adversity.
Yes.
You know, what's our attitude going to be like while we're going through it? So yeah.
Well, you think about like making cookies. You know, we all know what the ingredients are for cookies, but when we eat the cookies, it's delicious. But if we were to take if we were to eat those ingredients separately, you know, eat a raw egg or eat some vanilla or eat whatever, or the flour, all of that stuff, it doesn't taste very good. But when it all works together, it creates the beautiful picture, the beautiful cookie, if you will, of our life. And so when we fixate on one of those ingredients by itself, it's not going to taste good. It doesn't make sense. But when it all is mixed together, that is when we're really able to launch once again into our destiny.
I agree so much. I always tell everybody that that I mentor, that I counsel here and there, because I love talking to people and just, you know, helping them through different things. But I always tell them, you know, if you've got the right mix, you can make a great cake. And and it all it's dependent upon all the ingredients. And I said, you have to know that every single thing that happens in your life, I mean, you can approach it from a secular standpoint or from a biblical standpoint, but I'm not going to lie and tell you, you know, I believe that God's a strong helpmate. I mean, he's a helper in helping us to make it through adversity and things like that. And you can allow life to make you bitter or you can get better.
Yes.
And I choose to get better.
Yes, he's a very present help in times of trouble, that's for sure.
Yes, 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 absolutely. So, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, too, because of the times we live in, I think that it's so like people look at God like, well, you know, it's irrelevant or he's irrelevant. And I'm thinking, no, he's so relevant for this day and time. You have no idea. And I mean, I don't know how people make it through their lives without him. I really don't.
Well, Missy, I am so glad we got a chance to talk. You have such a fantastic story. And I'm so glad that you were able to share that with my listeners today.
I have thoroughly enjoyed myself, James. Thank you so much for having me, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Yes. Now, if my listeners would like to find your information online, where would they find you?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn or Instagram. You can find me on Twitter as well under at Missy Hood. It's MissyHood for Twitter. And then for Facebook, it's under Melissa Hood. But if you want to purchase the book, you can buy the book through Morgan James Publishing, Amazon.com. And my author website will be up next month, so they can purchase a signed copy through me if they want.
Excellent. Cool. Well, thank you again.
All right, James. Thank you so much. And you have a great day, okay?
You too.
Be blessed. Bye-bye.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast through whichever podcast portal you joined with me. If you're using iTunes and you like what you hear, please rate this podcast as well as leave your comments on the iTunes podcast page. Also, please visit my website where you may see all my YouTube episodes and published articles I've written for you. You may also enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created where you can take self-directed courses which are designed for successful people just like you. You may find all this information at jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode today. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to talking to you very soon.